Hey, Michigan, let's talk golf. Here's Mike Sullivan, the most inconsistent golfer ever.
In your life, have you seen anything like that?
And Kyle Bogey, wait, how can a guy with that name host a golf show? We'll never know.
Better than most.
It's the Metro Detroit Golfers Podcast.
Powered by our presenting partner, Hall Financial.
Well, off we go. The first episode of the Metro Detroit Golfers Podcast is officially underway. I'm Kyle Bogey. We got, of course, Mike Sullivan here as well. And really exciting. We're actually on site, sitting outdoors on the wonderful patio here at Oakland Hills. And it's my first time actually being on the premises. The first time that I've been allowed to be at the prestigious Oakland Hills. And really exciting episode here. We obviously have a conversation coming up with an absolute golf legend by the name of Tom Watson, and just an unbelievable conversation. And, you know, Mike, you've said this a bunch, you know, heading into it. A lot of people didn't know that Tom Watson actually spent a lot of his, you know, childhood summers in northern Michigan. So we'll touch on that. We'll touch on some of his stories. A lot to get into with him.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great. And just talking to Tom about Michigan golf and hearing some of his stories, just super nice guy. And then also certainly chatting with Steve Brady here at Oakland Hills, their head professional, about the South renovation. I'm going to see if I can get him to commit to saying that there will be a U.S. Open, a major championship, returning to Metro Detroit. So we'll see if we can get him to do that. But no, really just pumped up for the first episode here, and the fact that we're doing the Metro Detroit Golfers Podcast. I certainly want to, off the top, make sure that we acknowledge and thank our partners on this, who we could not do it without. That's Hall Financial and D-Hall. We know D-Hall is a huge golfer himself, and I think that D-Hall and Hall Financial are perfect for our partnership here. What they're going to be able to offer golfers, they should be your phone call and your go-to for anything mortgage-related, refinancing, buying a home, and really excited to work with D-Hall and Mark and do some fun stuff with them. And
then,
of course,
continue that partnership. We've gotten close with D-Hall over the years, and we really value that relationship. And again, anything that they can help with, please, they should be your go-to.
They should be. And I wanted to at least mention them right here as we're kind of setting the table for the podcast itself. And, of course, Tri-Covery, Massage and Flexibility, they're going to be offering a ton of golfer-specific packages. I think a lot of golfers don't even realize or think that, hey, maybe I could go get stretched out, get a specific golf massage, help with my game. I can tell you, I did one earlier this year, and I shot a 79 the next day. The same day. But really excited and thankful for Hall Financial, our presenting partner, and then also Tri-Covery Massage and Flexibility, who's just been crushing it, doing really, really well. But Kyle, excited about this. I think that there's going to be so much content in the MDG podcast. And I think that's kind of how the structure of the broadcast will go, with we're going to be able to have a great interview on every week. We're going to be able to talk local golf in terms of, I keep saying this, that Michigan's a golf state and the coverage just does not meet the appetite. We're going to be able to have those local golf discussions, the local fun discussions, and even things like look at the tour this past weekend with Dustin Johnson and John Rahm, and there's going to be a lot of different things to talk about with that stuff too.
Well, look, I think everyone wants to hear about me going out and firing a 50 burger for 9 holes, okay? I think there's a lot of appetite for people making fun of me for being an absolutely terrible golfer from time to time, but then also having the ability to go out there and shoot, a 39 for 9 and all that. So we're going to have fun going back and forth. You and I are similar golfers, so there'll be a ton of content.
You're going to be able to talk about how the hell you're still golfing so much with a newborn baby. I don't know. We'll talk about that. We got to talk about just some fun stuff with our friends. And we're doing a lot of video stuff, a lot of cool interviews. And I think it starts with what we're about to get going here in a minute or so with Mr. Tom Watson. Just, I think the people really like this. And Kyle, obviously, we just want to thank everyone for all the support of MDG. And people have really gotten behind Metro Detroit golfers. I've gone to so many courses and seen the gear that people have worn. So
into a clubhouse, MDG.
It's awesome.
Great. Really is.
I guess with that, we want to lead into Mr. Tom Watson. Kyle, I know you've been excited about that. And I think that's something where, what a awesome opportunity to chat with a legend for our first guest.
Yeah, a great conversation. And again, this is going to get bigger if you guys make it bigger. Continue to download, subscribe, The passion has been unbelievable. Please continue with the discussion, the comments, all the questions here moving forward, because we want to continue to blow this thing up and have even more conversations with legends like Tom Watson. We'll get to that interview coming up right now.
All right, well, Kyle, I know I'm really excited to continue our partnership with the man, the legend, D. Hall, and his entire team at Hall Financial. Now, of course, DavidHallMortgage.com, and you guys know that they're all about their customer reviews, and they got a ton of happy clients, but most importantly as well, D. Hall is a golfer, and it really was the perfect fit to help Metro Detroit golfers. They created a whole separate website that I want you guys to, at the very least, just go check out. You can see Kyle and I and our beautiful faces on there. But go look at it, hallmdg.com.
Yeah, you know what's really sad? D. Hall's better than both of us at golf, left-handed and right-handed.
It's amazing.
You know what? That's okay, because he's going to take care of you. And look, rates are incredibly low right now, and D. Hall and his team have been unbelievable. I've worked with them multiple times. They got me my first mortgage. I also just refinanced, actually, earlier this year, and they got me at an unbelievable rate. If you're paying over 3% right now, you need to give Hall Financial a call at 248-308-5000 or simply go to DavidHallMortgage.com. And look, as Sully said, they have a very specific page just for Metro Detroit golfers right now called HallMDG.com. And you might even see myself and Sully on that page as well. So go check it out right now, HallMDG.com. And again, if you have an interest rate over 3%, give Hall Financial a call today.
Okay, well, guys, I can tell you that I know Kyle and I are really excited to have none other than Mr. Tom Watson as our first guest here on the Metro Detroit Golfers Podcast. Tom, first of all, thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be on.
Mike, come on, you missed. Eight-time major champion, former number one player in the world.
Even the proper intro. But I will say this, though. A lot of those stats are known, but I do think that one of the most unknown things about Mr. Tom Watson is that a lot of people actually don't know, Tom, that you spent a lot of your childhood in northern Michigan. Could you kind of just fill our audience in for those who might not be familiar with your relationship with the state of Michigan over the years?
Well, it goes way back through my family's history. Back in the 20s and 30s, my grandfather, who tragically died in a plane crash, rented a place up there right next door to the Walloon Lake Country Club clubhouse on the north arm of Walloon Lake. And my dad spent a couple summers up there then. And when he passed away, they stopped going up there. So when my dad and my mom got married and had a family, I have two other brothers. A summer vacation to get out of the Kansas City heat was in order, and he decided to go give it a try up there. And he ended up renting a place on Walloon Lake for years and years and years in the summer. So I spent wonderful times in the summer growing up in northern Michigan, having a chance to be on the lake, and more important, playing a lot of golf as a kid. We played the Walloon Lake Country Club there. It had been reduced to a 9-hole golf course. Oh, Eddie Kelble was the pro there, a wonderful guy. He's since passed, and his son Pete is now a professional there at Walloon Lake, and they made it into an 18-hole golf course again, a really nice little golf course. And I spent years and years in the summer playing golf there, and other courses around there. Belvedere was my dad's favorite. In fact, that was the golf course. It's over in Charlevoix on the east coast of Lake Michigan there, and that was the last round I ever played golf with my father before he passed. So we had. I have a lot of great memories playing that great Donald Ross golf course up there, which was the site of the Michigan State Amateur for so many years.
Now, if I had to ask you, obviously you just mentioned a few courses that you had grown up on. What do you think overall, as we're really talking to Metro Detroit golfers, Michigan golfers, what would your two cents be on Michigan golf as a whole? Because I personally think that golf is very, very underrated. Michigan golf is nationally. I think that it's just a ton of great golf here in our state. What would you say overall about Michigan golf? Certainly, I assume that you've played Oakland Hills over the years. You've played Indian Wood. You've played Warwick Hills. But your take on Michigan golf as a whole, kind of that 30,000-foot view of what you think of golf in our state?
Well, from experience, the courses that I've played up in Michigan, in the U.S. Open, the PGA, at Oakland Hills, the golf courses I played as a kid up in the Walloon Lake area up there, Charlevoix, and those golf courses there were you know, the fescue was a dominant grass up there that we played in the rough. I remember the roughs there being clumpy, fescue, and bare dirt. And the fairways were watered, a single line water in the fairways. But when it got dry up there, I remember the, it has a little bit of feel to me of the links courses because of the fescue. Of course, the beauty, the great canopy of trees, the various, that you have in northern Michigan there was just, really wonderful visuals of playing golf up there. We played a course called Bayview, which is right there in Petoskey. We played over at Weekwitansing, which is originally a women's club on the North Shore of Little Travelers Bay. They played Belvedere, which is over in Charlevoix, which I mentioned before. In fact, the first time I ever broke par was at Weekwitansing. It's a short golf course.
Yeah, wow.
I shot 71 there. I think I was either 11 or 12 years old. Always fun to play as a kid because it was short.
Right.
And that translates into today and how we get kids involved with the game. I enjoyed it because it was short and I could knock it on the par fours and two and have chances for birdies. We need to emphasize that in more and more in trying to get kids out on the golf courses so they can actually have fun and score and play competitive golf on golf courses that suits their distance. Those are the memories that I've had of Michigan golf. I remember the friendships we made up there from various parts of the country, from Fort Wayne to people from Georgia coming up there to, a variety of people that enjoyed the northern Michigan country in the summer and had, just a plethora of great memories there.
Now, when you were playing in tournaments, here in the state, was there a different vibe? Did you almost feel that people, kind of wrapped their arms around you a little bit more and followed you a little bit more because they knew that you did spend some time, here in the state of Michigan? Us Michiganders, we like to welcome in and support our own.
Well, I had my followers there. I certainly did, without a doubt. I still have, at Whatlow Lake Country Club, Pete is established a tournament for the members there. It's called the Watson Cup. Mm-hmm. Every year they have four flights they play, and I help out with the tournament there. And they send me a cap that says Watson Cup on it. I still have my ties there. I haven't been back, unfortunately, regretfully, for many years, but I intend to go back.
Fantastic. Well, I would be remiss if, unfortunately, I didn't bring up something that a lot of people, I think, are wondering about and would want me to ask you about, and that is going back to 2009. And you might not want me to bring this up, but I know it's one of those things that everyone talks about because so many people wanted to see you win that. But the Open Championship could have been your sixth victory in 2009. All you had to do was par on 18, which us here, we're saying, oh, just get par. Of course, Tom Watson will get par. It didn't end up working out. You ended up losing, even though a lot of people were very disappointed by that. But if you could go back and replay 18 at all, what would you have done differently in 2009 to get that sixth open?
Well, yeah, if you allow me, I'll tell you a long-winded.
Please.
Please.
Going into the event, I was hitting the balls just as well as I probably ever hit in my life. I'm age 59, but I'm hitting the ball just spot on. I mean, it's going where I want it. I can shape it. I can do everything. The only problem I had was I was putting just horribly. Putter just wasn't working at all.
That's my issue.
Yeah, and I just I was trying everything, changing putters and all that. So I go to the tournament and at Turnberry and I say this because it's important because we played the practice rounds. I played three practice rounds there, 18-hole practice rounds, which a lot of the guys don't do anymore. They just played nine holes. But I played three practice rounds in the south, and the wind blew from the same direction from the south. And so I got up there in the second practice round, and I just putted miserably the first one, but hit the ball great. Get in the first hole, into the south wind. I hit an iron off the tee, and I hit a little punch six iron about 8 feet from the hole. Beautiful shot. it was probably from about 135 yards, 140 yards, just a little punch six iron. And I go up there to putt, and I left the putt from 8 feet short and to the right about 4 or 5 inches. And I said, enough is enough. I've got to think outside the box. So what I did, I, instead of rocking my shoulders under like this and like this, I just said, let me let the left shoulder go around and then around like this. And I made it, I made that stroke, and God, I hit it solid and it went straight. I did it again and I did it again and said, all right, I'm going with that. So that whole round, I worked on just going this way and that way. And it really worked. So now I'm getting really excited. I played the Wednesday practice round again, the south wind. And I remember Wednesday night in bed with Hillary, I said, you know, sweetie, I can win this tournament. She goes, huh? And I had a game plan. I knew the weather forecast. I knew that Thursday's round, the winds were going to die down. They're going to not have very much wind. But then I knew Friday the winds were going to change and they're going to be strong from the northwest. And I had played that golf course a ton of times in previous championships. That was the sixth time I played in a major championship at Turnberry. And 95% of the players who were playing in that tournament in the Open Championship that year had not played that golf course.
Wow.
So I knew that I had an advantage playing the golf course because the wind conditions were going to change. And I told myself, if I can get off to a good start, and I can hold on and be there at the end. And that's what I did. Got off to a real good start, and I kind of held on until the 18th holes. As you described, I had a one-shot lead, and I hit a perfect tee ball. And the second shot, I hit an 8-iron. I had 187 yards of the flag, and I hit it exactly the way I wanted to. And I couldn't see it land, but I knew it landed pretty much where I wanted it to land. But there was a pretty big gust of wind. It was blowing pretty hard at my back. I can't hit an 8-iron 187 yards. But, you know, links courses, you have to feel that distance.
Right.
And I hit a good shot in there. I really hit a good shot. When the ball was coming down, I really – in 1977, when I won, I had a similar shot on that hole against Jack. The ball was coming right down the stack. You know how you look up, you look the stack, look up.
Oh,
look,
yeah.
Up, like that when it's coming down. Same thing. And I said, wow, this is just like, I said, all right, now stop. And yeah, the cheer went up, and then they went, no, like that. And so I decided to, because the ball was, it was down in some, you know, they had a light rough there about that deep. And it was down about like that into the rough. It's half the ball was down there. So, you know, they had short grass just in front of it. So I decided I could pop this thing out there, roll it up the hill with a putter and get it close. And I didn't get it very close, 8 feet. And then I hit a terrible putt. And then I only hit one good shot in the playoff, Stewart's Sink one. But then, you know, you go through all the necessary things you have to do. You have to go to the press room. And the press room, the RNA man said, in the press area, Tom Watson. And I'm sitting there watching this slow procession of journalists coming in. They were moping. They were just, and I said, come on, guys, this ain't a funeral. Let's get this thing started. So we went through that. And then you had to did the necessary radio and TV afterwards. And finally got up to the room at the hotel. And Hillary gets a phone call. And she answers it, well, hi, Babs. Well, Babs is Barbara Nicklaus. just a second. And she hands me the phone. She says, Jack wants to talk to you. And he says, Tom, I did something I've never done in my life before. And I said, what's that, Jack? And he said, I watched the tournament from the beginning to the end. Every shot you played, you won the tournament. I go, huh? I didn't win the tournament, Jack. And he just said, no, you beat everybody in the tournament. So he was trying to console me.
Yeah.
And then he goes on. He says that he describes the 18th hole, which you've asked me about. And he said, well, you hit a perfect tee shot. The second shot, if it stops 6 inches shorter, you win the tournament. The third shot, you hit the shot that wouldn't lose you the tournament. And the fourth, the putt, you hit it like the rest of us would have hit it, you dog.
That's incredible.
Here's the greatest player in the world calling me to console me, knowing how I felt. You know, sticking the needle in me, you know, give me, you know, raking on me, but just to make me laugh. And he did.
Was that the type of relationship that you and Jack always had, or was that something that developed over the years? Because you two went at it pretty good there, you know, until the end of his career.
Well, I always had a great respect for Jack, and it did develop over the years. You know, we started playing practice rounds together. I always wanted to play practice rounds with the best players. So I asked Jack if he would play, and Trevino, and loved to play golf with them because I loved the way they managed the golf course. That was the thing that I was looking at the most. How do you play this hole? How do you play this hole versus how I would play the hole? And, you know, Jack was probably the greatest player ever to take the risk out of playing golf. He won so many tournaments by just outlasting players and letting the players make the mistakes. And he'd play the shots that wouldn't lose in the tournament, as, you know, he said about my chip shot.
Of course.
I had an opportunity to chip it or putt it. And I got that question at the press room. And they kind of harped on it. Why didn't you chip that ball rather than putt it? I said, well, I looked at the lie, and, you know, that lie was a little bit questionable. And I said, you know, give me the best chance here. So I putted it. And that was Jack. I remember a story about Jack. He told me, when he first started playing the Open Championship at the Lytham St. Anne's, he had a one-shot lead going into the 17th hole. It's a sharp dog leg left par four. And he had a drive out there that you have to lay up over here, and you have a long shot to the green into the wind. And he and his caddy debated between a 3-iron and a 2-iron. And his caddy says, it's a 3-iron. And Jack said, no, it's a 2-iron. And he said, I'll get the 2-iron. And I flushed it right at the hole. And the greens are hard. And he landed it short of the hole, but it took a big bounce and went over the green into a little depression over the green where he took 3 to get down. Then he bogeyed the 18th hole to lose by a shot. And he said, you know, Tom, that's the last time I ever hit the ball long when I had a chance to win the golf tournament. Always came, I want to be under the hole, under the hole. Good lesson.
Perfectly transitions what I wanted to ask you. By the way, I love the Jack Nicklaus impression. That's incredible. Yeah. We need more of that. But all jokes aside, in terms of lessons, and, you know, we were talking before we hopped on this video, you know, Kyle and I joking about three putting or playing against each other and whatnot, as we're about to later today. What would your, from Tom Watson, the number one piece of advice, generally speaking, you would have for an amateur golfer? Is it something regarding the mental side? Is it something, a more physical type tip? What would kind of be that best thing you could tell one of the many amateur golfers that's watching this interview right now?
Well, it's impossible to say one thing. But if I had to say one thing for a beginning golfer, I remember Byron Nelson used as his answer to that one question: what will make me a better golfer? Mm-hmm. Byron says, you have to accelerate through the ball on every shot, from your putter to your driver. You have to accelerate. You have to learn how to accelerate. And I think that's, you know, again, how do you do that? You know, that's something you have to learn. My dad taught me when I was a kid. He started me with a cut down hickory shafted 5-iron. And he said, all right, son, here's how you put your hands on the club. See two knuckles on your left hand here. The V of your left hand points to your right shoulder. When you put your right hand on here, that right hand, the V there points to your right shoulder. That's how you hold the golf club. And then he said, all right, spread your feet apart. And when you finish the golf swing, finish with your belly button facing the hole. Now that is a lesson that a lot of people don't understand. You know, to create acceleration, you have to get your lower body to lead your arms into the downswing through impact and keep turning through the impact area. And you do that by turning your hips and finishing with your belly button toward the hole. So if there was one thing, that's what I'd say. Finish with your belly button facing the hole at the end of the golf swing.
That's awesome. And I do have to ask you this. I jokingly told Kyle that I wouldn't ask this because I'm sure that you get this question all the time. But I do want to at least ask you on the general level. But over the years, especially now, there's a lot of discussion about golf and how much golf has changed. You got guys like Bryson DeChambeau just pounding the ball. And you know, there are a lot of people that seem to be upset with that even. But how have you viewed the game of golf in terms of how it's changed over time to what we're now seeing on tour right now?
There are a few things that have changed. I think, obviously, the golf balls have been the biggest change.
Mm-hmm.
The USGA did a comparison between the 1993 Titleist 384. I think you may be too young to have ever played with that golf ball. Versus the new two-piece ball, the urethane ball, the Pro-V one. They did a comparison, and they did it with their swing machine, which created 109 miles an hour of swing speed, and which is pretty fast. It's not as fast as most of the pros on the tour, but I mean, it's up there. And they found a 29-yard difference between the two balls. And you know, that was the biggest change. Obviously, the equipment, the wider sweet spots, the lighter drivers, I mean, they're not as heavy as the drivers we used to play. And you can swing a lighter driver faster, obviously. So that, you know, with the heads being the lightweight metal heads versus the heavy wood heads, and the shafts that you had to put in the wood heads versus the light shafts you can put in the metal heads, you create more swing speed. So the distance factor, those two factors right there, the ball first and the lightness of the clubs, that's been the biggest change. The other change that I have to say is that on the tour, you know, let's just talk about the tour, is the conditioning of the golf courses. The fairways run faster. Everything's consistent out on the tour. The sand's the same. The green speeds are the same. They're cut the same height. There's a lot of sameness to it. Back in the old days, we played golf courses where you had a lot of varying conditions. You had clover in the fairways. You had all kinds of different things going on, and the conditions were at best sometimes poor. But nowadays we play in very, very good, well-conditioned golf courses. So it's changed from that respect. But let me say this. When I went out in 1958 to watch the Kansas City Open with my dad, Dal Finsterwald won it. All I wanted to see, the only person I wanted to see, was George Bear. Now, do you remember George Bear?
No. Vaguely.
Just the name.
Yeah, the name.
George Bear was reported to be the longest hitter on the tour. Mm-hmm. I wanted to see the longest hitter hit the longest shot. And that's, people love to go out and watch that. They love to see those, you know, DeChambeau carry at 320. They love watching the long drive contest where the guys are carrying at 380, 400 yards in the air. That's amazing. And they want to see that. I mean, that's, people want to see that. But on the other hand, I concur with Nicklaus. I think the ball should be reduced in how far it goes. But it won't happen. I don't think it'll happen. I'm pretty sure it won't happen. I don't think the USGA, the RNA, and the manufacturers will get together and come to an agreement on that. People say, why don't you have a tour ball versus a ball that everybody else can play? I wouldn't want to see that. I want to see you two and me compare how far I hit it with the long hitters out there. When I play, I don't want two balls out there.
Well, if we ever played, Mr. Watson, I think the scorecard would look severely, severely different from us two to you. You know, so but believe me, that would be an honor to ever tee it up with you.
Real quick, based on it, obviously it'd be amazing. Based on what you said, though, I find it interesting. You know, you talked about the same conditions for every course, it seems, all over the country. Is that why maybe you excelled and loved the Open Championship so much? Because, I mean, everyone on tour can go out there and stripe it. You can tee to green all day, it comes down to putting. But the links-style golf, it truly is, as you said, strategy, wind is a factor, you know, being sure that there's so many other thought processes and strategies that go into it. Do you think that's why you were so good in that style?
Well, I hated links golf when I first played it, to be honest.
Okay.
I hit the ball high through the air. I wanted the ball to stop where it landed with the irons. It doesn't happen on links golf courses. Mm-hmm. Those greens are like concrete. You have to play the bounce and the run. Then you also have to play the uneven bounces. Those golf courses are not smooth, you know, with the machines out there. Those things were just laid out in the dunes, and over the years they have these bumps in there. And then it's just, you know, you can't depend on the bounces. And I didn't like that. I didn't like the luck of the bounce, and I didn't like the fact that the ball didn't stop. I did have pretty good success, though. I won my first Open Championship at Carnoustie, but I didn't really like links golf. I didn't learn to love it until 1981, basically. I went on a kind of a friendly golf sojourn with a good friend of mine, Sandy Tatum. We ended up playing the Royal Dorna Cup in the north of Scotland, and in the rain and the wind, and it was a hard conditions. We were wet and got to the 16th green. I look at Sandy and said, "Now I understand. You love this game as much as you do, in the conditions that we're playing in right now. I love them too." So I stopped fighting my disdain for links golf, and I kind of joined the forces and said, let's play it. Let's just play it like play the course as you find it. And I get back to when I was a young kid playing those courses up in northern Michigan, because they weren't water. And you got in the rough over there. As I said, you got the clumpy fescue rough with bare lies. And I couldn't hit the ball very far, so I had to roll the ball on the greens. And that's links golf.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at it, that's kind of the way links golf is.
That right there, with how the game of golf challenges you and how it seems to be every single day, there's something new with golf, and you got to figure out your own swing and your own game each and every day. But I think one of the things I love most about golf is that it also is a sport you can play your entire life. You just have shared stories in this interview about playing when you were just a young kid with your dad up north in northern Michigan. And obviously now, later in your career and all those different stories. I think, isn't that one of the reasons why golf is so special? Because it is a sport you truly do play your entire life?
Yes, you can play it your whole life. I know people in older age, they can't play. You can't play the racket sports, or they can't do the marathons and things like that. They take up golf, and it is a game of a life. You can take it up at any time. One of my goals I've always had in my local area is to create more junior golfers. With COVID-19 stopping all team sports, we have seen a huge increase in the number of kids that want to play golf. And we provided them the opportunity with an organization called Youth on Course, which is, the kids don't pay any more than $5 to play. And you get a whole bunch of courses who jump on the bandwagon and allow these kids to come out and play for $5. We had in Kansas City, our numbers greatly increased from March on. And we hope that what's going to happen is we take kids from the team sports that, they have to play all year round. And maybe they'll go out and maybe they've learned that they enjoy the game. And they like the game of golf and will continue with the game of golf. So, this is the silver lining in the dark cloud of the shutdown as far as golf is concerned. I hope that's the case.
I totally agree with that. Could you please fill the people in quickly on what you're up to now? I know you have a new passion of yours. You said that I kind of shared with us before the interview as well what you've been up to. I'll just let you say it and kind of explain what you've been doing.
Well, I over the last many years, my wife, who sadly passed away this last year, was involved with a sport called cutting horses. It's a ranch discipline. You get into an arena and you take a horse, you go into a herd of cattle, you separate a cow out, and then you try to keep it from getting back in the herd. And it's a very athletic endeavor when you're on the back of a horse, and that horse turns 180 degrees like this, following the cow like this. I love it because of the competition. I love it because it's new to me and I'm a rookie at it. It's a challenge, and I'm just trying to get better at that.
Lastly, from me, I know we got to wrap it up. I recently had a daughter. She is like 3.5 months old now, and I want her to be involved in golf. So, if you had to tell me when I should purchase her first set of clubs and how I should go about, teaching her, what do you think?
Get her some clubs, some plastic clubs right now. As she crawls around on the ground, holding the one club with one hand, using the hand to crawl around like that. That'll get him started.
Perfect. And I'll throw highlights of you on YouTube, and I don't want her to see my swing at all. How about that?
That's great. Well, Mr. Watson, I can't tell you how much that we and our entire Metro Detroit golfers community appreciate your time. I know you're a busy guy, and the fact that you took time to really chat with us is great. It's just so appreciated.
I really enjoyed the time with you too. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you, Tom.
I want to take a second to talk about Tricovery massage and flexibility. And this is something that is very near and dear to my heart, because once you get over the age of 30, Sully will learn shortly here, you start to feel a lot of pain, okay? And specifically for me, my back and my left shoulder have been an issue. But working with Jeff and Kevin and their entire team at Tricovery, both Novi and Royal Oak locations, it's been huge for my golf swing and my golf game in general. Being able to swing through the ball, that's right, make sure you're hitting it as far as humanly possible. And I'm out in the fairway even further than Sully.
I don't know about that, but yes.
I don't know. I'm hitting wedges in, you're hitting a 9-iron. Either way, Tricovery has been unbelievable in their effort to get my body going just a little bit more. And they want to help you as well, the Metro Detroit golfer out there. For the month of September, you can book a 60-minute session for $90, regularly priced at $110. So you can save $20. Just simply visit try-covery.com or follow them on Facebook and Instagram for more details.
Yeah, and I think it's cool what Jeff and Kevin are doing with the golf-specific packages. I think a lot of MDG members and golfers don't even think about doing something like this, right? You don't even think that you could actually go get treatment, massage, stretching, that would specifically be targeted to help golfers. That's awesome that they put together this golf package. I've done it before. Shot a 79 the next day. It was great. So make sure you check it out. Try-covery.com. That's TRI-covery.com.
Well, this is really exciting. The first Metro Detroit Golfers podcast, Mike, I certainly can speak for you that this has been an unbelievable start, and hopefully it paves the way for, you know, what is to come with the MDG podcast. And here we are at wonderful Oakland Hills. This is actually, I'm embarrassed to say, my first time being on the grounds here at
How
Oakland
beautiful
Hills.
Is it?
It's awesome. Unbelievable. And we're joined here by the head golf professional at Oakland Hills, Steve Brady. And Steve, yep. I understand you've been here for nearly a quarter of a century. I don't want to date you.
No.
But nearly a quarter of a century. Is that correct?
Please don't. Yeah, I came in right after the 1996 U.S. Open. Pat Croswell was the head golf professional at the time, and I was working at Detroit Golf Club up the street. And we talked, and he had lost some of his assistants, and he said, would you want to come to work at Oakland Hills Country Club? And I said, well, let's talk about it. And I started January 1st of 1997. Never looked back. It was the best move I ever made, but I was fortunate to have the ability to come here. So it was a great opportunity. I took it.
And since you've been here, you would have seen, obviously, the PGA Championship 2008, the Ryder Cup 2004.
Yep, correct.
What else am I missing? Was there
2002 U.S. Amateur.
U.S. Am. That's awesome.
Which was supposed to be in 2001, but September 11th happened.
Sure.
So they bumped it back to the even years. Oakland Hills has been a host to major championships for 100 years.
Absolutely.
Right? So it's a great place. Yeah.
Well, and it's beautiful. And obviously, I think we have this on video as well. So you can kind of see in the back, obviously, a lot of construction going on that's been in the news a lot lately. A lot of people know that the South Course has been, I'm going to let you use the words because it's a lot of people think it's a redo or whatever word you're going to use. But a lot going on with the South Course right now and that's that you guys have been announcing.
Yep. If you look behind us, it was built in – it opened in 1919. Donald Ross was the designer, and at that time he had a vision. He was hired to find a place to put the clubhouse, which is where we are now. It sits up 90 feet above the fifth green. So out there, at that time, there were zero trees. It was farmland. So he built a golf course, which was to play the game along the ground, wide fairways, huge greens, huge bunkers to match the scope of the land. At that time, it was the Mac Daddy. It was the greatest thing ever. And so major championships wanted to come here. The USGA wanted to come here. At that time, the PGA wasn't formed yet. So then over the years, as it evolved, everybody knew that Oakland Hills Country Club was a great place to have a major championship. You know, the auto industry started to boom. Detroit was the place to be. And we had the finest golf course, one of the finest in the country at that time. So it became well known. Players thought it was difficult. It became more difficult with redesigns. Robert Trent Jones. In 1949, and then Reese Jones again in 2006. So, but over that time, trees grew bigger.
Mm.
Bunkers became smaller. Greens became smaller through bunker splash comes up on the green. Mowing patterns during the war. You didn't have enough fuel to mow around, so they said, well, let's just make the green smaller so we don't have to spend as much money. So over time, it became narrow, smaller. Trees were planted. At that time, there was one row of irrigation down the middle of the fairway. So wherever the water went, that was green. So let's plant trees on the edge to define the golf hole.
Hmm.
Well, that's what it wasn't designed for. And Gil Hance came in a couple years ago. The club hired him at the time to go back to Donald Ross to open it up again, to clean out the gutters, let's say, of your house, to remove the
restore,
trees.
Restore, as you said, right?
Yeah,
it's a restoration, not a redesign.
Yep.
It's a restoration. And I think that's what's fascinating about it. Kyle, we were talking about it earlier, too.
Yep.
Well, and to me, you know, we've already talked about how difficult, you know, the South Course specifically can play. So I guess, how do you go from having the conversation to, you know, it's difficult already. We've hosted major championships. I know you guys have had wonderful events here, to, no, we need to do a little bit more. We need to take it to another level. When did those conversations start,
I guess? And that's what got me, too. That's what got me, too, because in 2008, when Patrick Harrington won the PGA Championship, he won it. I believe he was 2 under or 3 under. So the vast majority of the field was over par.
It's hard.
So I'm thinking, wow, Oakland Hills South is already tough enough, and now you guys are restoring it, which will make it even tougher, essentially.
So that's the major championship side of it.
Yeah.
But major championships may come along every 10 years, right? 5, 10 years. Well, for the next 10 years, let's say, the membership has to play the golf course. They bring out their friends. They bring out their guests. We have charity outings. We give back to the game, right? So on those occasions, people that come out to play, they may be happy that they were able to play Oakland Hills Country Club, but they might not have enjoyed the experience of the golf course.
Mm.
They'll enjoy the food and beverage and the clubhouse and all that stuff, but the golf course just beats you up.
Yeah.
So is it really a better golf course, or is it just a tough golf course?
Mm.
It probably became a tough golf course for the members. So the first part of this was to make it more playable for the members. So if you can see number one fairway, it's now 20, 25 yards wider for the members. And everybody likes it, right?
Yeah.
I do too.
Yeah.
So the fairways are much wider to a point of about 280 yards. Then the bunkers were brought in at angles for 310, 320, 350, or whatever DeChambeau and, you know, Cameron Champ's hitting it.
It's incredible.
And then who knows how far they're going to be hitting it 10 years from now. So more playable for the membership. Better turf grass. These greens were built to retain moisture 100 years ago because there was no good irrigation. So they wanted the greens to be green. So they were built with soil. Just took the soil, clay, whatever was under it, pushed it up and made it green, smoothed it out, and then cut it every once in a while. Well, over time, golf courses were built with more of a sand base, or the East Coast courses, or the West Coast, which is where the major championships tend to go. They want a sand base, so if it does rain, the greens are firm and fast, and you still have a good quality turf for major championships.
Sure. Yep.
So, did anybody want to touch the greens? No, because they were so difficult, and every player that ever played here, every designer said, these are the best green complexes around.
Mm.
Jack Nicklaus said it. Ben Hogan said it was a monster. So if you touch the greens, now you may lose it. Well, in the past 10, 20 years, you're able to map computer image, scan them, and then if you want to dig down and rebuild the bases with sand so that the water drains properly, then you can put them back to the way they were and expand them without destroying the original contours. So it's member playability, quality infrastructure, make the course firm and fast, remove some trees to allow for the views and the vistas from the clubhouse to the other side of the golf course and from the other side of the golf course to the beautiful clubhouse.
Mm.
All those things over time took time and discussion, and the membership supported it. So there you go.
Because of this restoration, do you expect Oakland Hills to get a U.S. Open?
Well, if everything will keep going according to plan, a major championship will want to come here. Now, is it just because of the golf course? Sure, they want a quality golf course, firm and fast. They want a course that the players are going to like to play. I think over time, this golf course, I'm not sure if every player enjoyed playing Oakland Hills Country Club. The history was there. The tradition was
there.
Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus, Ben Hogan. Sure, but narrow fairways with very penal fairway bunkers, with greens that were relatively wet. They got bumpy spike marks. The poana grew at different times of the day. In the afternoon, if you got a late tee time, you're in the late wave, the greens are all beat up.
Mm.
So Will we get a major championship? I think that will take care of itself.
You'd like to believe with the restoration, I'm sure. I mean, it's, as you said, major championship-wise, it is a beautiful course. It is a tough course. Yep. And I think that that's kind of what Kyle and I were asking, too, when we chatted beforehand. You said that the South will play around 7,700 yards.
You could set it up that way. So, wow. if the course will be around 7,600, if you move a tee back 5 yards and a hole placement,
that gives me anxiety.
5 yards, right?
My back's already hurting just thinking about that.
So if you just move those two back, you got 10 yards per hole. There's 180.
So for instance, you know, obviously with Metro Detroit Golfers and the 25,000 members that we have on there now, and everyone that loves to go out and play, and there are a ton of both private and public course members
mix.
And play, and there's a great mix of people. What would if a major would be played here? If you guys said, hey, course conditions, 7,800 yards. What would you get those greens rolling at? What's the number those greens would roll at for a Sunday on a major?
Well, if you go back to the way they were recently, so for the Ryder Cup, the weather was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
High clouds, it was no humidity, it was perfect. For a period of time, 3, 4, 5 days, 1 week, our superintendent, Steve Cook, got these greens as good as they could be at the time.
Mm.
But you only had 24 players playing.
Mm-hmm.
So the greens were perfect. So there were no ball marks, no spike mm-hmm. marks, and there was no play 2 weeks prior. So they were absolutely perfect.
Wow.
The issue here, though, is you have a morning wave of 80 players, and you have a new wave of 70, whatever it is during the tournament. Yeah. They're going to get beat up.
Sure.
So what would they shoot? It depends on the course setup and the wind. The one thing that any major organization or the golf professional staff or the superintendent can't control is wind.
Right.
But now, with proper drainage and that precision air system, we can control the moisture level in the greens with proper drainage in the fairways and in the roughs. We can control that now. Whereas before, our course was, depending on how much rain we got, it became wet, and that takes time to dry out. So okay. Major organizations, they want control of their turf.
Yep.
You want Comerica Park to be dry. You want, if you have some singles hitter, you want it real dry. If you got a power team, you want it to be
right.
Wet, so the outfielder can't get to the, you know.
Sure.
Football, same way. Drainage.
I'm being reminded of Northwestern's soccer. Football field, Ryan football field down mm-hmm. in Northwestern. Just awful. They have no control over it. Yeah.
Right. So firm and fast is the way to go. You'll over time, I think you'll not necessarily need to use as much water. Municipalities are going to start to say, hey, shut off the water. We need more water. So this course with the turf, the Poana required water.
Mm.
So it needed to be hand watered during the day just to keep the Poana alive. Now, bentgrass doesn't need that much water.
Yeah.
So the conditions are going to be better.
So as far as the restoration goes, the progress, things on track, you know, as far as what you guys started with and where you're headed?
Yep. Well, early in the season, we were on track. COVID restrictions slowed us down for a little bit. Then we got up and running. Then we caught up again 2 nights ago. We had, 2.5-3 inches of rain.
It was crazy.
And that you can't work during the rain. You have to let it dry out. You have to clean up what was, you know, kind of washed away. So that put us back a couple of days. But I think we're right on time, sure.
And when will it officially reopen?
Hopefully July of next year.
July of next year.
We're kind of shooting for a July 1, 4th of July week.
How cool.
Week celebration. Yeah. And it's just not for Oakland Hills. You know, we do charity outings. We do give back. We do have scholarships for everybody. Everybody, rich and the poor, we give back. That's all part of this mm-hmm. plan. It's just not a private club, and you can only get in here.
Sure. I played in a charity outing here just a few weeks ago, and it was fantastic. We played the North Course, obviously, and it was just awesome.
Yeah. Look, if I can be allowed through these doors, anybody can get in here, okay? No, I'm kidding. No.
Well, you're on double secret probation.
Yeah. Perfect.
Just don't, jury's still out. Yeah.
Well, see, and that's the funny thing, too. We were talking about, obviously, the restoration and how great the South is, and even those conditions. I think that has been a topic of discussion in golf with the conditions. We hear Justin Thomas say it about Winged Foot, how this is just incredibly tough, and especially U.S. Opens. USGA has been making these courses incredibly tough. So I think it is it's well noted and well documented about how beautiful of a restoration this will be and how tough the course will be. But also, I want to talk to Steve too about some of the stories he was telling us beforehand as well about your playing career. Now, you've played in
a couple U.S. Opens,
two U.S. Opens, three PGA Championships,
and a bunch of other stuff. So I played in the 84 U.S. Open at Winged Foot.
Wow, okay.
Which was, you know, my dad caddied. That was my first major championship. Wow. It was a big deal. And I remember Winged Foot being extremely difficult. It's 73 the first day, 80 the second day. And
wow.
I hit every fairway but one the second day. and made par on that hole. I just couldn't get an iron on the green. But I remember the golf course. I was the second group off, and I putted out, three putted the first hole for bogey. But I reached in the cup, and they had just painted the cup white, and it hadn't dried yet because it was so – I was such an early tee time. And I had white reached in, got on my hands, got on my pants. So I think I still have the pair of pants. I had white hand over my pocket.
Now, I've talked to a few guys over the years who, you know, like you, have played in some major championships, mm-hmm. played, you know, maybe on the tour for a little bit. Yeah. And the thing that they always tell me, because they're a relatively unknown – there's not a whole lot of crowds that are going to be following, you know, a guy, you know, maybe like you early on, or, you know, some other pros maybe that have played.
Yep.
But if you get paired with the right person,
yep.
then all of a sudden the crowds can come. Was there a situation that happened with you where all of a sudden you got people lining up?
Well, there was a couple, but in 1984, I qualified for the Buick Open that same year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So anyway, not to bore you with my career, but
please.
But 69 was my first round, right? I tee off on the back nine the second day. I birdie the first hole, par the next one, and make five straight birdies.
Wow.
Shoot 30 on the back nine of my second round.
Right.
And all of a sudden, I don't know how many people. I've never seen that many people. They're three deep trying
people
to watch
people found
me.
Out you were playing well, yeah.
And I was a local guy at the time.
Yeah.
I was from Saginaw, all that stuff. And so I shoot 67, end up 37 on the back nine. But the third day, I'm paired with Lanny Watkins, who was one of the best players at the time, in Isao Aoki, Japanese player.
Yep.
And he was one of the top players in the world at the time. And we teed off that third round, and I'd never seen so many people because I was the third group off, third from the last group off.
Wow.
Leaders won, and then we're the next group, and I didn't know what to do.
Wow.
And I had a wonderful time. Mr. Lanny was a great guy. He helped me around. But the crowds that day were unbelievable.
How much are you thinking about that when you're going to swing, when you're going to hit? You got people lining fairways.
Well, I had played in the U.S. Open earlier in the year. In my first U.S. Open, it was kind of the same thing at Wingfoot.
Mm.
I teed up my ball, and I went back. You know, you have your procedure. You tee up your ball, you walk behind, you look at the spot. And the crowds were, I mean, there were people looking over the ropes like this to see who's teeing off. Now, they don't know who I am. And I'm wondering, am I going to get it down the middle or up in the air or whatever? But it seemed like it took forever to walk back the 10 feet back to my golf ball.
Wow.
Three paces. So it was that kind of a moment. But as you do it over time, you become accustomed to it. You're still nervous on the first tee, but it's like, you know, it's like getting the first punch in a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get hit, now it's
and you're good.
Now you're
well.
Into it, yeah.
Is there any other big name? I know we were talking about Jack Nicklaus. Or is there any practice round or any, yep. any opportunity you've had to play with a really big name player like that?
So, in 95, the PGA was at Riviera Country Club.
Yep.
And I played my first two practice rounds. And then the third round, I wanted to play just my caddy and I to get my mind right, figure out what I'm doing. So I get to the first tee. The starter says, it's wide open, but Jack Nicklaus is coming up number two. And he's playing with a guy named Glenn Day.
Mm.
Now, at the time, Glenn Day wasn't the fastest player in the world, and his nickname was Glenn All Day. So I told my caddy, come on, we can catch up to these two guys. So I get to the third fairway, and I'm in the middle of the fairway, and Mr. Nicklaus and Mr. Day are up on the green, and Jack Nicklaus turns around, looks at me, and he waves me up from about 160 yards. Jack Nicklaus.
Wow.
He had this yellow shirt on, and I go, oh, boy, if I ever have to hit a shot, this is it. So I hit a decent shot up on the green. He takes off his hat, walks up to the front of the green as I'm approaching, and says, hi, I'm Jack Nicklaus. And I said, Mr. Nicklaus, nice to meet you. Couldn't have been a nicer guy.
Wow.
We went around to the sixth hole, par three at Riviera, famous hole with a bunker in the middle. He asked his caddy for his jackknife, pulls out this switchblade, 10 inches long. We had talked about me being at Detroit Golf Club at the time. They had just regrassed their greens.
Mm.
He says, I heard about that. How's it going? And I said, well, and he says, come here, I'll show you something. He digs out a triangle patch in the middle of the green, not off to the edge, in the middle.
When you're Jack Nicklaus, you can do whatever you want.
Digs it out and just pulls it out of the green. And he starts giving me a turf grass agronomy lesson in the middle of a practice round on Wednesday. And he's doing all this, and Fred Couples and Davis Love, who are buddies, they're teeing off behind us, and they say, hey, Jack, come on, let's go, pick up the pace. Puts it back in. We had a wonderful time, and I'll never forget that.
Oh, so, how cool is that?
Jack Nicklaus. Couldn't have been a nicer guy.
That's incredible. Real quick, Oakland Hills South specifically, after the restoration, I know you talked about number nine. How about this? 275-yard par three,
yep.
Correct?
Into a prevailing wind.
I hit my driver on that.
Yeah. With a green that, you know, it's a roller coaster.
So my other question for you, are you going to have a par five on this course that Bryson could not reach into?
No.
What distance would the fives play on a course like this? I know as you said 7,800, you could get it up to approximately.
Maybe 77. If you move some tee locations back and green place or pin locations back, but you really wouldn't want to do that all the time anyway. You wouldn't want to play a back tee to a back flag every hole.
Yeah, right.
You'd want to use the up, you know, the front locations. But so number two, we're moving the tee from, let's say, 560 back to about 600.
Okay, so number, you will have 600.
Number 12, the green's a little bit bigger. You could make that almost 600 yards. So Bryson DeChambeau,
yeah,
depending on firm and fast fairways, downwind, he can hit the ball 400 yards.
Sure.
Right? So, and then he can hit his three wood, which really isn't a three wood. It's, you know, it's a, I don't know what it is, 13 degree, 12 degree. He can hit that 330. So if that's the case, you'd have to make 730-yard par five, which... It's not really feasible. So what's the answer? Do you put huge bunkers directly across the fairway, or do you make the greens firm and fast where he's out there hitting at 360 and he has a wedge in his hand, but now you have the contours that Oakland Hills has or and has now, and make the greens firm and fast where if he's going to a back left hole location and he misses at a yard flying it and it's firm and it bounces into the thick rough behind it, all right, now it's different.
Sure.
But if you put the flag in the middle, fine. Anybody can play. But so it's whole location and course setup with firm and fast greens. That'll be the difference.
Now, and just to be clear, so 7,700 yards it would play at, at the absolute tips, and it would be par 70, though.
Correct. Par 70, yeah.
Par 70 from 7,700 is what they could get it up to, just so we're clear.
We would have to come and play that and record what we would shoot. From 7,700 yards.
From those conditions,
130.
Yeah,
I mean, that would be insane. Yeah.
Well, we have a same day rule here where you have to finish the same day you start. Yeah. So you guys would have to start plenty early.
We'll take the day off, schedule it out. No meetings that day.
Yeah,
but there'll be a handful of par fours here now, at close to 500 yards, which is which is what you want.
Yeah,
now,
sure.
If you place bunkers strategically at 30, 40, 50, 60 yards at diagonals, that toughens it up for the elite player, but the membership can now get in play off the tee, work their way either over or around those bunkers and play the game. That's the in the greens are more open in the front, so you can play the ball along the ground.
Okay.
Versus, you know, Coryell Air, you know, Air Bear. You don't have to fly it and stop it. Now you can run it up there.
Yeah.
So a tour player will now have that option. Which if they only have one option, lob wedge, fine. Now if you give them three options, low, medium, and high, they get confused. What do I do? There's doubt. When am I picking the right club? And in the middle of your swing, if you have doubt, you're in trouble. So that's why it's going to be a better.
Trust me, better
golf course.
I know all about doubting my swing. Well, Steve, we really appreciate the sit down.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate you having us out here.
We can't wait to monitor the progress and see everything that goes on here. It should be absolutely fantastic once it's all done.
I tried to get Steve to commit and put him on the spot. They are going to be getting the U.S. Open. He can't do it yet. I'm biased, and I'm certainly hoping that you guys will get a U.S. Open or a PGA. Obviously, the rumor seems to be USGA, U.S. Open, but that would be so awesome to have a major return to Metro Detroit. And I think that we've seen with the growth of MDG and our golf community, it's such a huge appetite for golf in Michigan. I think that this area would really support something like that.
Yep, and you just said it. U.S. Open, anybody can qualify for that. So for a long time, that was my favorite event.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, that was the only event I could play. I couldn't get in the Masters. I could get in the U.S. Amateur, but I couldn't get in the PGA. You had to be a PGA member.
Mm.
You know, British Open or the Open now. I didn't know. I didn't even know where, Europe was on a map, right? So, but I did know that if I got my handicap down, I think it was maybe five at the time, that I could try to qualify. Because we didn't have a lot of money. I wasn't a country club guy. But I grew up at a golf club. I was able to play and I worked the range and all that stuff. So I wanted to get into U.S. Open. That was my first one.
How cool.
And when I turned pro in 82, I knew that the U.S. Open was in 85 at Oakland Hills. And I said, my business plan will be if I don't make it on the tour by 1985, then I'll find something else to do. Well, I qualified for the Open in 84.
Wow.
So now it's funny that Oakland Hills is trying to get a major championship back here again for the first time since 96. So it would be nice to be able to do that. So
incredible.
Yeah.
Steve, thank you again.
You're
welcome. That was awesome.
Right.
Appreciate
Mike,
you coming
thank
out.
Thank you.
Yep. Absolutely.
Kyle,
and when everything's done, we'll have to come back out and check it out and talk to you and you can show us around. It'd be great.
Love to have you.
Awesome. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
Yep.
All right, Kyle. Well, episode one of the Metro Detroit Golfers podcast in the books. Think it was a great one. And really, really just fired up to be moving forward and doing more of these. Great guests lined up, great content lined up. And I do want to remind people, for updates, we actually just bought a ton of text message credits. We can update via text message as well. All you do, you text MDG to 545454. It's like my scorecard sometimes. 545454.
Maybe
five,
for
four.
Nine.
Yeah. No, but you no in order. You know, you get a five, then a four, then
oh,
a five.
Oh, right, right, right. Yeah, sure.
So, no, guys, text MDG to 545454, and you're going to get updates first. And Kyle, something you've really talked about, too, with just people's passion is what's going to allow us to help grow this. And I think that it is so simple in terms of social media algorithms and getting stuff pushed out to more people. Really just sharing it with your friends. Hit the share button. You know, send it to a friend. Comment on a post. All of that stuff really helps push it, and we appreciate the obviously, it's crazy that we have 25,000 members, but what's even more crazy is the level of engagement, comments, shares, reactions. Keep that going.
Continue to make it your own, really. You know, use the community, you know, for your purposes, to showcase your game, to ask questions, you know, to just talk about golf. That's really what this entire thing is all about, and we want to continue to grow it. And again, if you want to get some swag, you want to represent the MDG group, you can go to MetroDetroitGolfers.com. And once again, you know, this first episode is in the books. We got a lot more, you know, coming, but we want to thank Hall Financial, our presenting sponsor, and of course, Tri-Covery Massage and Flexibility. Just unbelievable, and it wouldn't be possible to be doing this without them.
Yeah, and that truly is what it is, partnership. And we love the support that we've gotten from them, and certainly the support from the community. So let's keep it going, and we're just getting started.
Thanks for listening to the Metro Detroit Golfers Podcast. Make sure to hit that subscribe button and keep giving Sully and Bogey a hard time.
Powered by our presenting sponsor, Hall Financial, and also Tri-Covery Massage and Flexibility.